Maybe I have the power. Fantastic.
There we go. Okay, so thanks so much to everyone for taking your time out to join us today. You're all very welcome, and we're absolutely delighted with the turnout and to see so many people keen to take this conversation further. My name's Niamh Warnock, and I work for Lawcare as the Engagement and Relationship Manager. I'm going to do a really brief intro just now before handing over to Nick Bloy of Wellbeing Republic, who's going to lead the session. Nick chaired a men-only focus group for Lawcare back in the summer of 2022, where barriers to men speaking up about their mental health or seeking help were explored. He then authored a report entitled Men's Mental Health in the Legal Profession, which considered the discussions had and the outcomes of that session, which was published back in November. Nick will also be joined today by Nick O'Neill and James McFarlane, who are both lawyers who have been involved in setting up men's groups for those working in the legal sector. By way of background, and as you may be aware, we released the findings of our research study, Life in the Law, in September 2021. The aim of this research was to take a snapshot of the mental health and well-being in the legal profession to help inform any future steps the profession could collectively take to improve the culture and practice of law. The aim is that we use those findings to drive long-lasting change in legal workplaces to benefit both the present and future generations of legal professionals. And at Lawcare, what we've done is we've created a strategy that ties in with the findings, and those are continuing to guide us in our work in 2023. So, where does that tie in with men? We noted that around 65% of those who contact us are female and 35% male. We know from lots of reports and statistics that men in general are less likely to discuss their mental health or seek help for mental health problems. But at Lawcare, we know that mental health doesn't discriminate, and we want to do what we can to affect change. We want to try our best to reach more men through our support services, and we also want to help more men have the confidence to reach out and have the conversations that they need to have. At the end of January, we released our impact report for 2022. When we reviewed the statistics at the end of the year, we were really heartened to see that we had had a 3% increase in contacts received from men in comparison to 2021. We believe that this uplift reflected the impact of the Lawcare report and the work that we did during 2022 to encourage more men in law to seek help and support for their mental health. So that sort of brought you up to speed with some of the background. Now I'm going to hand over to the very capable hands of Nick, who's going to lead the rest of this session. Thank you.
Thanks, Niamh, and welcome so much, everyone, and thanks for joining. It's great to see so many men in the audience, which is obviously the purpose of today's topic, but obviously a pretty good balance for a change rather than the stats that Niamh just talked about in terms of there generally being an underrepresentation of men when it comes to talking about mental health in the legal profession, but more broadly as well. So what I thought I'd do is just give you a bit of background from where we started with Lawcare. Last summer, essentially, I was asked to run a focus group. And that focus group was literally focused on men and looking at, as Niamh talked about, the barriers that they face in speaking up, but also understanding what it is that helps them to seek support when they need it. So I'm going to share a few of the findings from that before engaging. And I think what you will find a really engaging discussion with both Nick O'Neill and James McFarlane, looking at the work that they've done in setting up and running men's groups, as well as right at the end, we're actually going to give a bit of a simulated version of what that might look like in practice, just to give you a bit of a sense of what these things could look like. So just a little bit more about me, for those of you who haven't come across me before. I am the founder of Wellbeing Republic, and I set that up just over 7 years ago now. I'm a former lawyer, former HR business partner, but I spend a lot of my time now working with organizations, quite a lot of them law firms, really focusing in on how we help individuals, teams, and organizations to flourish. And I've had a very close relationship with the legal profession ever since I stopped practicing. I work with the Junior Lawyers Division in terms of helping them with their statistics and surveys around measuring the rates of mental health within the profession at that 5 year, well, 0 to 5 year PQE level. I was also on the research committee for the Life in the Law research, which Niamh talked about as well. And then I also was helped out with the Law Society guidance that was produced for best practice and how we best support those people within the legal profession as employers. But back to this really niggly stat, which has proven really hard to shift. I think great news that we've seen this kind of 3% uptick, but invariably it needs to be much more for us to make real headway in getting more men to both talk about, but also seek out the support that they often desperately need when it comes to their mental health. And indeed, I think having held that focus group back in July, I wanted to just share with you some of the insights from that. If you haven't had a chance to read the report, it's available on the Lawcare website, but I will just do a brief summary of some of the findings that we had from that, because I think it's quite helpful for context when we're sort of talking about why we're thinking about men's groups as a way to engage more men in this topic. So I think one of the key things that we looked at was, first of all, the experience of mental health or mental ill health for men in law. And some of the key things that came out from those, and there was about 10 people, really nice mixture of senior and junior barristers and private practice lawyers, as well as those who were in-house as well. So I think there was a really nice mix, which gave us some really great insights from that group, which have probably been echoed and mirrored elsewhere. But it was really helpful to have those people together to talk about some of the things that really can trip men up when it comes to seeking out the support that they require. And one of the key things that they talked about in that group was this real kind of still very apparent masculine gender socialization, this need to be tough, to be stoic, to be infallible, to be successful. And it's interesting because I've literally just a couple of hours before going into this meeting, I've been emailed by a partner that I work with who's a nutritionist, but who's reached out because a really close friend of hers, her husband is really, really struggling with her mental health, but is refusing to acknowledge that there is a problem. And again, very much by the sounds of it, adhering to this need to be stoic and strong and infallible. And I think we need to do something to bust that, because invariably it's causing people to suffer when they should be seeking out support. And so some of the key things to come out of those conversations were the sense that often it feels like clients expecting them to be experts in everything with no room or no time for error. And also in terms of, especially for the more junior end of it, kind of looking upwards and really thinking, well, there's so many brilliant people around me. Do I even deserve to be here? Am I good enough to be here? So that real sense of almost that imposter phenomenon creeping into the male psyche there as well. And then we also heard, looking at kind of the other side of the flip side, so the bar, on the bar side, the barrister or QC, in fact, just talking about the added pressures. So absolutely kind of echoed those sentiments, but also saying, actually, as a self-employed barrister, you've also got the extra pressures of finances and paying chambers rents. And certainly for them, it led to them to becoming an alcoholic. That was their outlet for dealing with a lot of the pressures that they were under. Again, because they didn't know the support that was out there. And they certainly probably didn't have a better method to support their own mental health in that challenging circumstances. And then from an in-house perspective, I thought this was very interesting, because we often, and certainly I'd talk about the fact that hierarchy, I think, can often be quite damaging. Certainly if we think about concepts such as psychological safety, I think most of the experts out there and the scientists would say it's probably harder to create, it's not impossible, but it's harder to create psychological safety when there's a very rigid hierarchy in place. But it's very interesting to hear from this in-house perspective saying, well, actually, it can be challenging having a lack of hierarchy, because it can give a real sense of, well, where am I going with my career? You know, there's no way up. And I guess if you have been conditioned to feel that the way to be successful is to continuously strive upwards, then obviously having that lack of hierarchy can have a negative impact on our mental health as well. And then a really harrowing story, and there are a number of harrowing stories in that focus group, which I won't be able to all share with you today, but again, worth probably reading the report if you're interested in learning a little bit more, is one of the senior associates that was present talked about the fact that they'd really struggled with mental health, and they thought they were in a safe environment, in the sense that the partners were all, you know, talking the talk. But when it actually came to getting the support that they needed, when they opened up and said that they were struggling, actually, it turned out they weren't prepared to walk the walk either, unfortunately. So that person ended up having to leave that law firm as a result, because they just felt that the environment became quite toxic. And it actually impacted on a number of the colleagues as well, who also realized that actually it wasn't a particularly safe environment for those people who may be struggling with their mental health. So really, really important, I guess, to back up the messaging that is often put out there with some substantive action when people do genuinely need that support. And of course, there are lots of positive stories out there of that happening, but I think it's incumbent on us to remind ourselves of why this stuff is so, so important. And then we looked at some of the key barriers, and I've just touched on a couple in a sense, but just to kind of elaborate on that a little bit more, I think definitely that idea of male gender socialization is critical for what prevents men from speaking up. I think the other thing that we discussed was this concept of emotional illiteracy in men, in the sense that many of us growing up, and I'll speak for myself quite readily, is that we're not really taught to express our emotions. We're pretty much told to, you know, be angry, or, you know, certain things are allowed, but the other side of the spectrum that we might term as more feminine emotions, we steer well clear of. And so we don't really get the chance to practice vocalizing and expressing how we feel. And that can be really challenging, of course, when we do experience mental ill health, because we don't know what's going on and we don't know how to express ourselves. And so that can be another significant barrier that can prevent men from speaking up. I think leading on and kind of touching on that previous story that I talked about that senior associate who ended up leaving because when they did reach out for help, they didn't get it. And in fact, it ended up working against them, was this idea of this lack of inclusivity or psychological safety. So if we're not creating those safe environments that's backed up by substantive action that supports people, then realistically, especially when we're thinking about what men feel they have to do to live up to those norms, it will make it even harder for them to want to speak up and show vulnerability. So these things are critical as a base level to get people to open up and to talk more readily. And then, the other couple of things I wanted to talk about were role models. Again, many, many of the people in that focus group, and certainly beyond that, and indeed, have talked about the power of role models, to have people who, certainly in more senior positions generally, who speak up and are open about the trials and tribulations and the vulnerabilities that they have as a human being, not just a lawyer, right? And then the fact that having external confidential support is pretty important. But last but not least, and the reason that we're here today is to talk about the power of support groups. And I think if we take all of the things that I've just discussed and kind of condense them into one thing, support groups actually are a really powerful way to kind of meet almost all of those needs that people discussed in that focus group and that people say that they need in order to be able to open up and to seek support when they need it. So support groups were a key thing that were discussed, and I think a very helpful concept for us to take forward, which is why LawCare was really, really keen to run today's webinar, to share some great insights from two brilliant minds who have done just that. And so that is what we're going to talk about for the rest of today's 45 minutes that we have left. So getting more men talking through men's groups. And as I said, I've literally been joined by two brilliant shining lights of the profession, Nicholas O'Neill and James McFarlane. So just by way of intro, before we get into the nitty gritty of how we do this, and hopefully there'll be some people here who are inspired to go away and maybe take some of this responsibility upon themselves to go and maybe set something up for their networks. So I'm really, really keen to see how this conversation goes. But Nicholas O'Neill, after a successful career as a litigation solicitor partner at KLS Law, he recognises real passion for people and operational management. Following the completion of his MBA at Nottingham Trent University, Nick moved into full-time legal practice management in 2010. Nick has managed three private sector law firms and spent 5 years as the legal governance and practice manager at Wirral Borough Council, And in January 2021, he moved to take up the role of Chambers Director at Oriel Chambers in Liverpool. Speaking about mental health, he struggled with his own mental health as a young solicitor, and after a period of self-development and study, became a law care support worker in 2010, so literally 13 years ago. And Nick is a law care champion and regularly speaks on the legal circuit on behalf of law care, communicating the services that this amazing charity provides. Nick is a qualified ILM Level 5 mental health career coach and regularly coaches young lawyers to assist them with their career goals. And I've had the great privilege of being involved in a couple of events with Nick before, and he has some really, really great insights to share. So I'm really grateful that he's agreed to join us today. And James is from Glasgow and completed both his LLB and diploma in professional legal practice at the University of Glasgow. He is a solicitor at Bernice Paul's dispute resolution team, working in its leading contentious IP and technology practice for almost 2 years. He's a member of the firm's mental health steering group and also the Be Valued Committee, which focuses on diversity and inclusion at the firm. James is also a founding member of the Wellbeing Group for Men in the Legal Profession in Scotland and is passionate about working to remove the stigma around mental health. He's a mental health first aider and has written various articles and appeared on a number of podcasts to discuss his passion for the improvement of our wellbeing. He's also an MCR Pathways mentor and is keen mental health ambassador for incoming trainees and solicitors at his firm. So I honestly cannot think of two more brilliant minds to share the stage with today and to talk about men's groups. So let me stop sharing my screen so we can actually see them and hear them as well, which would be great. So welcome both Nick and James. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Nick, for having us.
What an introduction.
I know I feel late. I've got a lot to live up to now.
Well, I'm sure you will not deserve one. So look, you know, I'm going to ask you a series of questions because I think the people who've joined us today are clearly interested in this topic, and I think your experience will really help shape their thinking around how maybe we take this conversation forwards. So what I thought I'd do is maybe first turn to, how did you both get involved in running a men's group? Who wants to take that first? Maybe Nick.
Hi everyone, thanks for coming today. My experience of setting up a men's group, my mum was a therapist and consequently I had an understanding of the benefits of talking. I was approached when I was at Wirral Council to talk at International Women's Day about female mentors. And I vividly remember to this day the positive energy in that room was absolutely insane. All these women talking about mental health so freely, and I actually found myself feeling quite jealous and thinking, you know, well, all these women can do it, so, you know, why can't us chaps do it as well? And then I took a step back and thought, well, what would it look like if we had a room full of men? And I just realized, I became quite depressed about the thought of it, because the level of communication, especially around mental health, just wouldn't be there. So it got myself thinking about what a men's group would look like, discussed it with HR, and then we began to put the building blocks in place and took it from there, really.
Fantastic. James?
Yeah, so I've been interested in wellbeing since probably the last year of my university, just when my own wellbeing started to take quite a dip. I suffered quite a lot from imposter syndrome, which made me feel extremely anxious, especially when I started my job. And then just as my career was beginning, 6 months into my traineeship, the COVID pandemic hit and I really struggled. So essentially from then, I thought, right, how do I make this better for myself, but also how do I prevent others from feeling this way that are within this profession? And I noticed that a lot of male colleagues and people that I'd went to university with, my friends, really struggled to be open about their mental health and their well-being when speaking within your own friendship groups and things like that. So it just made me really, really passionate about it, and I just wanted to start something that could change that.
Amazing. And so how did you set it up, James?
Well, essentially, What happened was that during the pandemic, I regularly spoke with one of my best friends who's also a lawyer, and I realised that doing that really helped me through that. I mean, essentially, I don't know where I'd be or what I'd be doing without the conversations or Ryan especially. So what happened next was there was a men's mental health roundtable, which the Law Society of Scotland ran, and while the group was on, I spoke about that and how that connection improved my well-being, and how I thought that connection with other like-minded people would be one way to help the mental health of men in the legal profession as a whole. And essentially, Darren Kerr at the Law Society said, "Well, I brought up the idea of starting the group, and Darren Kerr said, well, why don't you?" And ever since, Darren Kerr and Olivia Moore from the Law Society of Scotland, they've been massively supportive in of what we're trying to do ever since. And that essentially was how it started. I just put up a LinkedIn post, and there was so much interest. There was over 50,000 impressions on that post.
Wow.
And I know, and from then I just realized that that was something that we needed, and I just got it started from there.
Really, really interesting. Yeah, thank you. Nick, how was that for you? Different? How did you set yours up?
Yeah, very different. I'd worked in the private sector for 20 odd years, and when I went to was essentially the civil service at the council, there was a realization that they're a lot more suited to talking about mental health generally with men and with women, and they have a far they're far more experienced with HR teams, huge HR teams who've just got vast experience. They don't have that sort of almost alpha demand. There's no race to the top because there isn't a top. It's a very, very different cultural organization. And there was a realization that there was a that there had been a large space for women to talk and women to express themselves, but especially historically, men had always had a voice, and right up to the suffragettes, and there was almost a sort of unspoken about guilt that men almost didn't need to have the space because it had always been there for them. We had to sort of, have that quite honest conversation around, well, men do need a voice. And it was also right around the Me Too campaign time. So timing was terrible as well. So we were sort of putting our hands up where men were getting slaughtered across society, in some ways quite rightly. But yeah, the realization there was no space for men to discuss their health in such a large organization, 2,500 men. And we just took it from there.
I was going to say that sounds like pretty terrible timing to set one up, as you say, but actually,
Awful
it's so
timing.
important. Cool. And so, having set it up, like, what does a typical session look like?
It was hand on my heart. It was honestly like pulling teeth initially. We had no real understanding of because it was a workplace organisation, and we were almost thrown together. It didn't work at all initially. There was no dialogue. There were a lot of passengers without anyone having a real voice. We realised to get an impetus, we needed the right people involved, and we needed men who legitimately wanted to share and improve the organisation's looking the way it looked at mental health. Because it was a workplace initiative as well, it was a real challenge to get men to speak freely. And I have absolutely no doubt that a non-work related group would have been a completely different beast, essentially. It took time. We were resilient, and we were determined to make it work. But it was hard going. It really was hard going.
Yeah. James, I think you've had a slightly different experience, which is probably a good one to share, just so we've got the yin and the yang there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's important to pick up on what Nick said there about the fact that if it was a non-work related group, then that would have been better. And that's something that we certainly have tried to do from the beginning, was almost allow people to enter that group and be humans before lawyers, and just, if they want, forget about being a lawyer for an hour. Of course, if they want to speak about the work, then they can. And in terms of what a typical session looks like for us, it's on Teams, so it's online, which we wanted to do because we wanted to have as many people in the legal profession in Scotland to be able to come along and join. It has a loose theme. Each session has a loose theme. So, for example, the first one was opening up about mental health and our struggles with that, and that's led to that led to a build up in trust from the outset within the group. And then there are I give a quick introduction and then get the conversation going with questions, very much like this session, actually. And then it just flows from there. And the guys can all speak about whatever they want to speak about, and the session will just go wherever they want to take it. And then at the end of the session, we generally take 5 or 10 minutes to suggest books, podcasts, songs, or quotes which have been inspirational to us, which have helped us and on our journey to better well-being based on the theme at the beginning of the meeting. So it's always quite a nice way to wrap up the session.
Nice. And then how do you decide on themes?
Well, essentially, it either comes from previous conversations within the group, or like, for example, the happiness one and the worries one. We spoke about that in one of the sessions, and that was just because that had come up in previous conversations. And me myself, I'm really interested in well-being, and I'm sure anybody that knows me would tell you, I constantly read about it and try to learn about it. So sometimes it comes up from that, or a suggestion from somebody else in the group. So yeah, it's generally just one word, and then we just roll with it.
Wow. Nick, what about you? How do you kind of set up your sessions, and how do you decide what to cover?
We realised that we needed to start the conversation, so generic health conversation, and then drilling down into more focused topics that members of the group wanted to talk about. We held clinics as well to see if people would attend them, and they were really poorly attended. It just didn't work. So we were feeling around for what worked and what didn't work, realised that the organisation was too big to have lots of men from diverse employment backgrounds in the same room because they felt nervous about talking, they didn't have enough in common. So we realised that we needed groups to have something in common where they were less nervous and were more likely to be open and have, and actually to have common challenges. So the concerns or challenges that they were bringing to the conversation were more likely to be relatable. So that began to work as well. So similar to James, having a specifically a law support group, we realized that, we literally have lawyers, gardeners, and that began to work a little bit better. But we got there, and it was good.
Nice. And any kind of key highlights in terms of from the sessions that you've run, what would you say are the key highlights?
One of the funniest things with the group was I didn't even know there was an International Men's Day until ironically a lady mentioned it to me. There is International Men's Day, but it is so, it's just not even given a minute's thought. And going back to what I said earlier about historically, men have always had, everything almost. History would say men had everything, and then women have had to fight over the years to get onto a level playing field. So we decided to slightly rail against that and celebrate International Men's Day. So celebrating International Men's Day during the Me Too campaign was something that was challenging and we thought quite brave. but we got the right topics, we had the chief executive involved, and it went down an absolute storm. Hundreds and hundreds of employees were engaged, and the conversation was flowing. We had some amazing people attend to speak, and that was amazing. And then the group just grew from them. So yeah, that was a real achievement.
Amazing. Good to hear as well. Trying to get, I mean, that's, I think, one of the hardest things is to engage with men. So when you know, do something like that, it's really powerful. So kudos. What about James? What about you? What are one of the highlights for you?
I would say, like, as a whole, the highlight has been just watching the connections form between the individuals that join the group. Watching people grow is something that I enjoy doing. But like in terms of the group, watching that growth and watching their relationships build, and for me personally, building relationships with the guys in the group, that has been the overall biggest highlight of the group. I would say in terms of the sessions themselves, the session and happiness was genuinely brilliant. I genuinely felt as though by the end of the session, everybody was happier, which was the desired effect. And then the one that we'd just recently done on setting goals and New Year's resolutions, that was so inspirational for me from a personal point of view, but it was just good to see the amount of people that took inspiration from just the fantastic contributions of the guys in the group.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, I remember us sitting on another panel and you talked about some of the themes that you've covered in previous sessions. And I was just kind of going, don't think I've ever had, you know, I've never, you know, spoken on these topics with my friends. Mm-hmm. And I just find it fascinating that we just don't talk about this stuff as guys without maybe a bit of prompting from people like yourself.
Exactly. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do men benefit from this? I mean, you've already talked about the fact that, you know, you run a session on happiness. By the end of it, people are generally feeling happier. But kind of what other benefits are there for men being part of such groups?
I would say the first benefit is connection, is being able to connect with people who are like-minded individuals and people that have had different experiences from your own, because I really feel as if you listen to people, you can learn something from everybody that you speak with. And obviously a wellbeing group, everybody that joins that group is interested in wellbeing and also is there for themselves, but also to be part of a group which wants to help each other. So it's amazing. It's a safe space to open up. And as you just said there, Nick, I think we as men don't give ourselves the time to talk about things that are actually going to benefit our lives, like mm-hmm. our happiness, like our purpose, like setting goals. It's almost like maybe a 2-minute conversation. And so I think that one of the main benefits is that just giving yourself an hour out of every month to actually focus on where you are at as a person in your career, and also how you feel, and be honest with yourself and the others in the group about how you feel and where you're going, where you want to go, and see if you can pick up on the wise words from the other members of the group. Because genuinely, I'm not just saying this, the people that are part of that group and that join genuinely are inspirational every time. Like, I literally write down things that they've said and try and pick it up in my own life. So yeah, that's what I would say are the main benefits.
Fantastic. And Nick, what about you? What kind of benefits have you seen for the men that have been attending your groups?
There was a real palatable fear when we first started, and then a realization that it was a group that was specifically for men and that it was a safe space. That was hugely important. Even though it was in a work environment, we actually talked about the fact that, you know, nothing is being recorded. It's a safe space for engagement. And over a period, over a number of weeks, they relaxed into the conversation and became happier to disclose issues that they wanted to talk about. And yeah, it became a lot lighter. In fact, it became it initially started quite a sort of almost like a heavy, a lot of people with the weight feeling, looking like they had the weight of the world on their shoulders, and then realizing that this group was, you know, to support them and let them engage freely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that safe space, I think, critical really, as you talk about, in order for people to actually genuinely speak up about this stuff. And James, just building on what Nick's talked about, like, how do you, is there anything you did specifically to ensure that it was a safe space?
Yeah, I mean, there were a few things. As I mentioned earlier, the first session was on the difficulties of opening up about your mental health as a man. And I think, I don't know whether that was intentional or not at the time, but I think that really helped. As I say, I'd never done anything like that before, but I think that really helped. And another thing that has allowed us to create a safe space is me right away being vulnerable. I just went in and told the guys why I was so passionate about it, why I thought that it was good to have a men's wellbeing group, and spoke about my own difficulties in the past. And I think that builds up trust within the group. And we always make clear that people should, if they want, forget about being a lawyer, but also just anything that's spoke about within the group stays within the group. And I think as lawyers, we're quite good at doing that anyway. So building up that trust, building up those connections within the group, and just making it clear, being vulnerable, all of those things amount to becoming a safe space for others to speak openly.
Yeah, and some really good ideas there, I think. And you know, if I'm ever doing leadership training, you know, trying to get leaders to understand the importance of being vulnerable themselves, if you want someone else to speak up, then you kind of need to lead the way, right? So I think, again, great that you were able to do that. I'm guessing possibly a little bit scary as well, maybe, given that you didn't know everyone that was there.
Absolutely. It's terrifying, especially being a solicitor at the beginning of my career. I thought, wow, this is risky, and who's going to listen to me? But it's worked out okay.
Yeah, it sounds like it for sure. Nick, anything else to add on that in terms of how we best create some safe spaces? I know you've already given some great ideas, but anything else off the back of what James
about? Just building trust over time, relationships, and yeah, it's not a race. It needs momentum, so you need to keep going with the conversation and pushing. The leadership of the group needs to have that determination to make it work, and to be patient. Similar to any sort of almost like a coaching relationship, being patient and letting the trust develop over time, and then if you're willing to do that, then you'll bear the fruit eventually, and then you get into that sort of momentum where it is recognised that that's a steady space to communicate in, and it almost becomes easier.
Yeah, and I like that point about it. You know, some of this stuff does take time. It's not going to happen necessarily straight away, and to stick with it and be resilient with it, as you talked about before as well. And I'm going to come back to James on this one, given that you managed to get 50,000 impressions on your LinkedIn post. Like, how do we engage people in it? How do we get people involved?
I genuinely have no idea how that happened. But what I can say is the ways that I've used to get people involved is LinkedIn posts, because lawyers are generally mostly on LinkedIn. In fact, social media was one of the sessions that we had. Word of mouth as well. So just people that go away from the group and say that group is quite good, maybe it'd be useful for other people in their workplace to join. And I also speak to people about it and about coming along to the sessions whenever I get a chance. And just, I think, for me, being open and honest about my mental health within my workplace, within my personal life, and also on things like LinkedIn, it has really helped. And like, for me to bring people to the group and get them involved, it's just about me being as authentic as possible when I'm putting those posts out, and really having no pressure on people, because it's hard. And sometimes you feel too busy, and you think, oh, there's no way I could join, but it's just taking that first step. And I've just basically tried to make it as easy as possible for people to join. And that's been quite effective so far.
Yeah, nice. What about you, Nick? Any tips on how to kind of get that word out and get people more involved?
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite passionate about mental health and can get quite angry and preachy about it, because I truly believe that if you're passive about mental health, especially with men, nothing will happen. So I was banging the drum. I got some amazing support from World Council HR, who, you know, really, really bought into what I was trying to do and what I was trying to achieve, and supported me with email campaigns, online campaigns, and the momentum went from there. So I was lucky in some respects, but I made my own luck, but that I was like a dog with a bone, wasn't going to let it go, and ultimately made it happen. And I think that's really key. You've got to have that passion and drive, and you've got to want to actually make it happen.
Yeah. I mean, crucial, right? Because otherwise things just end up flailing away.
Of course,
I'm mindful there's quite a few questions coming through on the chat, and I think hopefully we're covering them as we go. Certainly some I can see that we have. It might be that what we end up doing after this is having maybe a bit of an FAQ for any questions that we haven't, because I'm just mindful of making sure we have, you know, sufficient time to cover everything that we wanted to as well. But please don't feel that if we're not coming to your questions and answering them, then please don't be offended. We will try and get back to you in one way or another, even if it's after this session today. I guess last question, because I did want to have a bit of a discussion with you around a topic, but what would be the best way to set one up? We've all also already heard a little bit from actually the downsides of doing it, maybe from an internal perspective, maybe the benefits of doing it from maybe a more impartial and an objective perspective. Any other thoughts about what would be the best structure to kind of get one going?
I would say any way that helps men come together and connect with each other. But whilst we were working in a hybrid environment, I thought online was the best way to go. And I would say probably to have as wide a reach as possible, so it's as easy as possible for people to join. I would say the best way to set that up is maybe either through work, or if it's a local law society, you could do that. But if you could have some sort of similar experience for men to go, oh, I do that, maybe I should join, that people can relate to at the beginning anyway, then I would say that is the best way to set it up. Just make it as easy as possible and just be available for people.
Nice. And Nick, anything from you?
Yeah, setting something up in a working environment is hard, because there needs to be the trust in the organisation that is, for one reason or another, often isn't there. Especially when you're talking about mental health in the legal profession, of course, where everyone's supposed to be, you know, resilient and alpha, and to talk about mental health is, you know, like taking off your armor. So I think what James has done blows my mind. Massively jealous and really interested in ripping off all of his ideas. I would go externally all day, and as James has said, make it as easy as possible to engage. And social media is just so easy to engage with our networks now and just build that momentum. So yeah, external all the way for me.
Cool. Thanks, Nick. And brave man, given that he's in James is in litigation and IP. So stealing his ideas.
Well, I was a defendant litigator for a long time, so I'll give him a good scrap.
Did him good. Did him good. All right.
No thanks.
Okay, so I'm going to hand over to you two kind of experts on this, and I'm just going to set out the topic here, and I'm going to let you play with it, right? So James, you talked about happiness obviously being one of the highlights from the kind of conversations that you've had in your groups. So I thought I'd go a little bit further and just say happiness and success.
Yes.
What does that look like?
Well, I suppose, Nick, I don't know if you agree with me here, but I suppose that the first thing that you would do when discussing the topic of happiness and success is to ask, how do you define happiness and success? And whether, in fact, if you look at happiness and success together, whether the two intertwine, and is happiness the result of success, or is success the result of happiness? And I think we'd spoke about before that a video that Sean Anker done, the TED Talk, and it spoke about success and how, and I think this is so relevant to lawyers actually, that when we see success at different stages in our career, but then as soon as we hit that point, we change the goalpost to some other success, and then we think then we'll be happy. And that's very much been my experience. So I suppose the first stage of the session would be to define happiness. I don't know if Nick has any thoughts on that.
Unfortunately, being somewhat older than you, young James, I agree 100%. I always remember, I will be happy when I get to here. I will be happy when I'm an associate, when I'm a partner, I have a bigger car. And I always remember one of the lessons that I learned. I drove a Saab, an old bashed up Saab for years because I read John Grisham novels. And one of the partners said, "Now you're a partner, you should have a flashier car." So I sold my Saab and I went out and bought a nice flashy sports car. And I absolutely hated that car. And I desperately wanted my old Saab back. And it just made me think that what was I chasing? Was I chasing, was my ego pushing me? Was I looking for material gain? What other people thought I was or should be? My view is it's fleeting, very fleeting in life. Happiness just comes and goes. And I think if you accept the fact that you can almost feel happiness going through your life and recognizing and thinking, well, that was a moment in life. And I think happiness is transient, and that success is a journey rather than. To use that cliche, success is a journey. It is. It's a journey rather than a defined
Destination. Yeah.
target or goal.
Absolutely. Because I feel as though the end point is always so much less satisfying than you think it's going to be. Because it only as you're saying that it's fleeting. It really is. And one thing that we spoke about in our group, in fact, we did speak about a wee bit success, but one thing that we spoke about was, what is it that makes you happy? And I remember being, when we were discussing that in the group, I remember it was like, even myself, it was like, I've never thought about that before. This is a struggle to find out. And I think it's so important to know what makes you happy, because then you can bring it intentionally into your life. But one theme that I noticed about that was, everything that everybody said, it was all based on allowing ourselves to switch off and spend time doing something that we enjoy doing with the people that we love. And I think that has been my like mantra ever since. And I think, again, leading back to that Sean Anker video about it, he mentioned the fact that the whole idea of success is actually backwards. So it's like, if I do this, then I will be happy. But really, what we should think, and I absolutely agree with this, is if we make ourselves happy first, then we can be successful, and even more successful than we would be if we're not in a good mental state to begin with.
I've got a question just off that, by the way, because I'm curious. But when you had that session on happiness, did it end up tweaking the way that you focused on things going forwards and changing maybe how you dedicated your time? I guess as lawyers, we're all kind of charging time on things. You're like, well, wait a second, for the rest of the time that I'm not working, how am I going to divvy that up?
Absolutely. It did. It actually changed my whole, in fact, my whole definition of happiness, because before the session, I was like, well, happiness is something that we want to strive for, and but really that isn't what we're striving for. Because happiness is fleeting. It only happens at certain moments in your life, but it's just about like being well overall, or at least having that purpose almost of trying to become a better person. That's where the satisfaction comes for most people, and that's certainly where it comes from me. So I came away from this session thinking, well, maybe happiness isn't the aim. It's just a byproduct of having a purpose which you're trying to achieve.
It's also about, without getting too deep, it's being, you know, all of the emotions, happy, angry, sad, you know, every label that you want to put on your emotions, being accepted that they're all just part of being human beings. Not chasing happiness as a sort of nirvana, that when I get there I'll be happy.
And I think what was important in any discussion about happiness or success is how to do those things. And at the end of our sessions, again, I don't know, Nick, whether that's something that you do in the sessions, but at the end we're always trying to hone in on, okay, we spoke about happiness, for example, how do we become more happy? How can we bring these things into our lives? And guys in the group, they mentioned gratitude, journaling, meditation, exercise, and among a range of other things. And since then, I've been trying to incorporate that as much into my life as possible. And I think that's where it's so valuable, because you can pick things up from other people, which actually has a profound and deep impact on your own life by coming to a men's group. So it certainly made me more happy.
Brilliant. And I think that whole piece around human connection as well is absolutely crucial, right? And I think one of the things that, you know, we can take from, I think, this discussion, but obviously others that have been happening elsewhere as well, is that I generally think that if we're not able to share who we are, then we're probably not feeling wholly connected with other people either, right? So we're not bringing our whole self. So these groups are a real, really brilliant way for men to start actually, you know, bringing their entirety to the fore. So again, well done to both of you. I know there's been, you know, an easier road than a harder road for one and the other, but I think both very, very worthwhile. And I think everyone here has been certainly singing your praises for all the great insights that you've been able to share today. I'm mindful we've only got about 5 minutes left. I could have asked you another 100 questions, no doubt, even just on that last topic of happiness and success, by the way. But you've given sufficiently of your time, so thank you so much for that. Niamh, I know you wanted to say a few things, and maybe I can have a look through the questions as well, just in case there's anything else that we can pick out and maybe just finish off with. But Niamh, if I let you do that, and I'll try and quickly skim through anything that I think might be really, really good to finish up on as well.
Yeah, no problem. So just really to say thanks to everybody from joining us with today. We've had a fantastic turnout, and I'm pretty biased, but I think that was a brilliant session as well. So thanks very much to Nick, and James for all your great insights. And really, at Lawcare, we would be absolutely delighted if we heard that as a result of any of these discussions today, that any new sessions or groups were set up. So if anybody attending today does decide to take those steps and set up a new group, please do let us know. You can find details for Lawcare on our website, or you can reach out to any of the members of the team or our official pages on social media. You can keep us updated, and we would be more than happy to share details of any new groups within our networks. And then really, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind everybody that they're also very welcome to contact us through our direct support channels. We have our helpline Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. Online chat can be accessed via the Lawcare website on Tuesday, Wednesday and Friday. And you can also email through to support, which is support@lawcare.co.uk, .org.uk. And we also have a whole host of resources available online. So just a quick reminder that all of that is already set up. And yeah, let us know if you move forward and set up any new groups. And thanks again.
Yeah, we'd love to hear it if you're inspired from today and you do go off and set up a group or combine together to to take this conversation forward as well. There are so many comments in there, so I have done a bit of a job at trying to read through, but I'm not sure if there's any one question that probably stood out above any others, because they're all so good and some great contributions in there as well. Maybe, again, I think just to reiterate what Neva just said, thank you so much to James and to Nick for your contributions today, because I think invaluable is probably how I would describe them. Any passing words from either of you before we leave everyone to get on with the rest of their day and hopefully be inspired to go and continue this conversation?
I just want to thank you, Nick and Neva and Lockyer for having us on. I really appreciate it. And of course, if anybody wants to reach out to me and ask any questions about setting up a group, or of course joining our wellbeing group, then please feel free to contact me on LinkedIn or my email address or however you want to.
Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly the same from me. Thanks again, Nick, for facilitating. If anyone wants to reach out on LinkedIn, by all means. And again, thanks to Neve and Rose for chairing the online webinar. It's been great again, great turnout, and hopefully we can keep this momentum and conversation going.
Yeah, fantastic. And I can see someone that's already said they're starting a new men's group on Friday, and so they've already got some great insights to take that one forward. So fantastic. Look forward to hearing how that goes. Cool. Well, look, thank you so much to everyone who joined today. Thank you for all your contributions in the chat. We will get through it all. We've got it all saved. So we will, you know, as I said, hopefully produce an FAQ for anything that stands out that we feel that we didn't cover in the session. It has been recorded as well. So if you know someone who you think would benefit from today, please, obviously, when we do circulate the recording, please do make sure that you send it on as well, because I'm sure this could benefit many, many others as well. But yeah, thank you so much, and look after yourselves.